bank robberies?
I may have one hunt left in me.
Welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Ed Kalenge. Time for this week's edition of On the Mark with Mark Leonard. But before we get to Mark, it is time to commemorate Mark's second anniversary here on the show. Mark's been with us about as long as we've been here on the show, and Mark continues to provide us and you with the best audio essays about film on a weekly basis that you will hear anywhere, not only on radio, but on television, any kind of platform. Mark is the best, and we are very fortunate to have him here. And we hope to have Mark with us for a long, long time to come. So let's begin year three with Mark, shall we? This week, Mark is talking about the film Hell or High Water.
Some label it the Oscar curse, and many might think that Jeff Bridges caught it after finally receiving his long overdue Best Actor trophy in 2009. Let's just say that outside of the fine True Grit remake, Bridges' work since has been somewhat less than inspiring. But boy, did he come roaring back in a big way with his superlative work in David Mackenzie's Hell or High Water. With one late film gesture alone, I wanted to simply hand Mr. Bridges his second Academy Award. What follows that is the most intense and emotional revenge sequence since 1992's The Last of the Mohicans. Bridges plays Marcus Hamilton, a soon-to-retire Texas Ranger, tracking two elusive bank robbers across a dust-blown landscape. Chris Pine and Ben Foster, both terrific, portray the crime's spree brothers, and although their reasoning is somewhat honorable, it all ultimately leads to bloodshed and tragedy. Okay, at times it's just a bit too easy and familiar, and screenwriter Taylor Sheridan definitely soft-pedals a major plot point, but whenever Mr. Bridges is on screen, it's difficult to not forgive any minor missteps. He's that good. Maybe statue number two good come February 26th. Ed, back over to you.
Thanks, Mark. And as always, don't forget to check out Mark's terrific website, reviewedbymarkleonard.wordpress.com. And again, Mark will be with us next week. And again, happy anniversary, Mark. All right, we move to a story that just really got to me when I heard it. It was something I heard on the radio, and this goes back to a second part of last week. There was a story in New York City where women were being targeted and having their shirts lit on fire by guys walking by with cigarette lighters. How ridiculously sad and sick is that? You're simply walking down the street and someone comes up to you and tries to set you ablaze. So it is something that obviously needs to be covered by local media. So I turned on my radio one day last week. So I go to a station in New York that is highly respected. It's one of New York's big news stations, 1010 Winds. You give us 22 minutes and we will give you the world. Well, this day they gave me quite the annoyance as well. And I would imagine anybody else that listened. They have a street reporter. His name is John Montone. He's been there for decades, and he's usually out covering the big story of the day. But John is, he tries to be a bit of a jokester. He doesn't only report the news. He has to put little quips, little turns on language. And while reporting the story about women being targeted and set on fire in New York City, he noted that the attacks always occur on Saturday nights. So he invoked the line from the Elton John song and changed it a little bit and said, "I guess Saturday night's all right for lightin' instead of fighting." Really? For someone who has covered stories in New York City for years and years and years, how do you do that? Was he making quips on 9/11? Was he making quips when there were the bombings in New York City last week? Really? How insensitive can it be? And if you're one of the relatives of one of these women who were targeted, how does it make you feel? And as an audience, how does that make you feel as well? What does his news director think? The report aired, I heard it at 9:20 in the morning. I wonder how many times this pre-recorded report was allowed to air again. I went looking for the audio on their website because I wanted to play it for you, and of course it's gone. At some point, somebody had the good sense to pull this down because making fun of women being set on fire in the streets is probably not a good thing. Saturday night's all right for lightin'. I mean, how insensitive and just how plainly stupid and ignorant can you be? You're working in the number one media market in the world, and you decide you need to be that funny? If you want to go be a jokester, go get yourself a stand-up routine at the Gotham Comedy Club over on 23rd Street and give up the whole news thing. But I guess you still have to pay the bills. So when you get to the point where you decide you want to start making jokes like this and you find things like this funny, maybe it's time you look in the mirror and maybe it's time you think about what would happen and how you would feel if someone in your family who was a female was walking along the street in New York and was set on fire by a lunatic. Would you want someone making jokes about an Elton John song about them? I would imagine not. So next time you're in New York, if you need the news, maybe not turn to that station, because God knows what they're going to say. And John Montone, really? Wow. Anyway, back to Journalism 101 for you. Stay with us. More to come. I'm Ed Kalenge, and this is America Weekend from the Envision Radio Network. America
Weekend. Order in the court.
This is Attorney Jay Coleman with the final verdict. Diane had just paid her fare on a city bus and was beginning to sit down when it pulled away from the curb. She fell and hurt her back, so she sued the city for her pain and injuries. But in court, the city proved that the bus was operating in a safe manner because the driver did not swerve dangerously away from the curb. Who do you think won this case? The final verdict after this.
Just because you don't have time to read a book doesn't mean you can't enjoy stories about artists and groups that you love. To discover a whole new world of audiobooks and hear the stories that made the music, visit HappylandAudio.com. That's HappylandAudio.com.
Although it was proven that the driver didn't swerve dangerously, it is still the driver's duty to wait until Diane had a chance to sit down before moving the bus. Diane won, and that's the final verdict.
Now, cheap psych tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. So does your child like to be tickled? Well, it can do wondrous bonding things. Here's what a physiological tickle is and the science of it. First, a tickle is any attempt to defend the body's vulnerable parts, and you can't tickle yourself. Well, maybe a little. Second, only when the tickler is perceived as harmless will a person enjoy a tickle. What's the cheap psychological trick? When you tickle your child, they trust you. They believe you. They believe you will not harm them. They are surrendering themselves to you. They laugh because they love you. Between parent and child, this is an inviolate trust. Do it right, and it can facilitate a lifetime of love and bonding. Do it wrong, cross the line, and a simple tickle can turn into a lifetime of separation. Check out my book, Cheap Psychological Tricks for Parents, at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MY-TV.